Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock. And joining me today, of course, on the other side of this lovely room with a crackling fire, some lovely shag rug at our feet, tumblers in our hands, and robes around our waist, it is Paul Sporer. Hello, Paul.
Good afternoon, Nick. We got the lights a little bit low. It's gloomy outside, a bit rainy. Had the eclipse yesterday, which was fun being in Texas. Got the totality of it. Neat little experience there. But with the rain today, it's a little gloomy. So the fire is needed. And I'm happy to get by the fire. Unfortunately today, Nick, we got some negativity.
I know. Today is not the cast of Celebration. It is actually, is that a theme that we have now for this fireside? The first one, or the one last week, of course, we were talking about those who had not performed well and how should we be assessing that moving forward. And when we sat down and thought about different topics, I mean, there is really no grander topic in the majors right now than just the incessant battering of our notifications. And this guy's elbow hurts, this guy's elbow hurts. Look, it was a weekend. We had Spencer Strider. We had Shane Bieber. We had Framber Valdez yesterday.
Perez was locked right before that. Yuri Perez was guaranteed.
Went to Tommy John. He was already there. We thought it'd be okay. Maybe not. I mean, I'm just waiting for the ball to drop here. And Garrett Cole. We just had Pivetta about 30 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I wonder as well. Chase Silseth.
Yeah.
It just does not end. There is a fantastic article that I encourage everybody to read. It came out about a week ago from Ben Lindbergh at The Ringer. And anytime Ben Lindbergh puts out something that is over 1,000 words, you have to stop what you're doing and read it. And he goes over this entire discussion about, is the pitch clock affecting this? Is this just a general chaotic mess of crisis, really, I should say, UCL injuries in both the minors and majors? What are the impacts of it? What are all the things? How do we solve it? And I think a really fun discussion today is a little bit on the fantasy side, of course. I do want to have this convo with you about, and I just said convo out loud and I hate myself for it.
Why?
About
a goofy word.
How do we change this? And that's where our major focus is going to be today. If you're unaware, you must be under a rock, because we've seen this constantly. These guys are throwing not 93, 94 anymore. They're throwing 98, 99. They're pushing the upper limits of what is capable of a human being.
We laugh at low 90s. Like, that's like a week. That's right. Crazy, Nick. When we were kids, that was good.
And I even said, look, like, guys who throw low velocity get Tommy John too. They do. Mm-hmm. However, those that have high velocity, clearly it's just more stress on your elbow. We know Definitely. This is just more force and everything. There are ways to prevent it, maybe, but this is a problem. And I don't know what the correct solution is. Is there a solution? Do we need to have a solution? Because I don't think anybody wants a game of baseball where if you play at a specific position at a high level, you are not going to be healthy for across 5 years. You just aren't. It's so rare. It's so, it's an inevitability these days that you would just are going to get Tommy John. Mm-hmm. So where do you stand on all of that? How do you feel about this? Is this something that we need to address? Is this something that is going to continue? What do we do?
I don't know that it's going to continue to get worse, only because I think we're kind of at the upper limit, right? Maybe just volume of players getting hurt. But in terms of like the upper reaches that they're hitting, we're kind of there. But it starts so young, right? You got these freak parents who are wanting their kids to get TJ, requesting it when there is not a damaged UCL. Insane. But the incentive structures are so tied to velocity that it's an inevitability. Now, the only thing that I've always thought was like, well, can't we move the mound back a little bit? And we take, then it's harder to throw that fast. They'll just keep trying.
It harder, they're going to push further, right?
Exactly. They're going to push harder, and the raw number might dip, but the exertion to then throw 97, 96 at that 6 inches further back, is only going to maybe put even more stress on it. So that's not a viable solution. I don't know what the solution is though, Nick, because everything is tied to velocity. You get so many chances with velocity as your foundation. You can have an outing in front of a scout, whether you're being scouted for like some sort of youth travel team, all the way up to the blue chip college. You get your face caved in for 7 runs, but you never threw below 98, you're getting an offer. Meanwhile, the finesse guy that never cracks 93, that drops a one hitter, is getting a tap on the butt. Good game, kid. Have fun at the JUCO. Maybe you work yourself back up, right?
Right.
Being a little bit extreme, but not really that extreme. Certainly not on the velo piece. The guy that gives up 7 runs, but never throws lower than 98, getting an offer from the blue chip. Guaranteed, 100%. Locked and loaded. The finesse guy, depending on some other things, might still get a look. But not if they don't push 90 at age 16. And so it all starts so much younger now. And what do you hear every single athlete talk about? Let your kids diversify their sports. Stop going full bore only on this. But at the same time, you look at the incentive structures of being full-time baseball. You never want to feel like you're getting behind. And all the rewards of a blue chip scholarship, getting to the majors, the finances that come with that, it all funnels into pitch, 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 pitch. That's it. More right. spin, more velo. It's all we need. Unless we address it at the low end, I don't know that anything we do at the majors would matter. And not only that, but any changes we make, it's going to be a decade in arrears, right? It's going to take a long time to, like, you're turning a cargo ship around. Actually, I don't know how quickly cargo ships turn around, but you're turning the Titanic, you know, it's going to be a really slow turn anyway, but I don't even know what the solution is.
Yeah.
Well, you can't put a speed limit out there.
Right.
You can't say you can't throw above 97. First off, that seems wrought with its own potential issues of like, pulling back or whatever. I don't even know. And then like, do we not want players to be the best that they can be?
Sure.
And like you said, guys who throw 93 get hurt too. Obviously not at the same rate. So, you know, a bunch of yap in here by me. I don't have the solution, but I think it has to start at the lower end, whatever it is.
Yeah. It's there are so many thoughts, so many ways to approach this. First and foremost, it's absolutely a problem. And I think something that Ben Lindbergh hinted at, which I have to give a massive shout out to Jeff Nivine also, who had the idea of having on pitcher list, I think back in like 2020 or 2021, of max effort as being a stat, as a showcase for injury. And saying what is his max effort? And I actually, how he defined it, I remember working with him a little bit, being like, well, it needs to be actually a range for the pitcher itself and the percentage, not necessarily percentage of highest, but also what is the lowest, and understanding, you know, the doing some more research into max effort and who are the ones that have fewer injury risks and so on and so forth. The problem is that there are many factors. You know, it's not just velocity. Like, how is Aroldis Chapman not getting Tommy John all the time? And Justin Verlander honestly throwing hard for ages and not really going underneath that until he was 39.
Until he's in his late 30s, early 40s, which at that point, it's like kind of a no duh situation.
Right.
Time was going to catch up.
Needed it at 47 or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, Randy Johnson and Pedro.
Now, are these just outliers though?
Well, that's the thing though. This is the kind of the crux of what I think inevitably happens. So regardless, I mean, I have a massive conversation I want to have about just the route, right? Not the major league level, but the actual route. I think we do need to recognize from the owner situation or running a team, what is going on is that you are getting, as a baseball club, so many capable pitchers now. More so than ever, we have all these players that are capable of the same things, overpowering fastballs. And you even see, we talk about it constantly, hitting a baseball now is harder than ever.
Absolutely.
Because there are just so many talented players that are throwing so hard all the time. And the reason that this, you know, as you're talking about this, this crisis is happening is because they're getting rewarded for it. And every team says, cool, we don't really care about the injury. we just are going to throw you out there. And then when you're hurt, there's somebody else who's going to get called up. Look, we're looking at, you know, we saw Sawyer Gibson Long. He has elbow soreness this morning too. And what is my thought? Obviously, like, I want Sawyer Gibson Long there. That's disappointing. That also means that Jackson Jobe gets closer. And there's someone else waiting, is my point.
It's the next man up thing, yep.
Right? And there's always someone kind of there. And that's not going to change. If anything, that's going to get more amplified.
Yes. And in fairness, that's how teams have to look at it, right? It's not trying to be callous.
No.
And I think baseball does a better job than, say, football of maybe, you know, discarding injured players. And I don't even like framing it that way. But, you know, at least there's guaranteed contracts. So the money that you're that you have on the books, you're going to get that. Whereas in football, you can have an injury and poof, everything goes up in smoke. Right. Your contract isn't worth the paper it was printed on.
Guys,
but that doesn't help minor leaguers, right?
I am never going to be the person that tells you that in a company, the employees are expendable. Without a doubt, no. That is horrible. And I never, ever want to, you know, think.
And I know you weren't implying that, by the way.
No, right.
I'm just saying.
I also need to acknowledge that that's how owners see their players.
They do.
So if that's the case, then... Right. I mean, some actually don't. There is actually some things that I know, like in the NBA or something, the Nationals, those guys are loyal and they're going to hold on to, not the Nationals, the whatever that team is, the Wizards.
Yeah,
they will be loyal in that way. And I kind of respect that. I had a friend of mine talking to me about that, which I thought was actually pretty cool. Even though that makes the team worse, it's just kind of like, yeah, but we like you, man. And like, we don't want to just treat you as expendable. And I think there's something beautiful about that. Anyway. Right. That's the optimum strategy, right? To, hey, I've got a stable full of guys throwing 99 or whatever, right? With the Rays. So this is how I see it happening is ideally when you start having such a massive pool of pitchers who have this ability of success, right? You are going to begin now the process of weeding them out. And we right now have a system of, hey, we only can expect so many innings from these guys. We can't overwork them. We can't do this. We can't do that. But Lindbergh makes such a good point of like, they babied Yuri Perez and they didn't baby Sandy Alcantara. And they both had the same result, right?
Because it doesn't work. The babying doesn't work.
Right. And we thought that the non-babying kind of maybe didn't work for Sandy Alcantara. And honestly, it maybe kind of was the right move and it lasted for longer, you know, than others.
And I think a lot of times, sorry, with Miami, they've proven or they've shown that they usually are ready to use the bullets when the guys are ready. Remember how surprising it was when Jose Fernandez broke camp. Yeah. And even Yuri Perez, while he was babied, it was still shocking that the timeline that he was on because he was a teenager last year. So they've at least as an organization shown that, hey, when guys are ready, we're going to give them an opportunity on the big stage. They wanted to try to take care of Perez. But I wonder if more teams just need to kind of, hey, when they're ready, they're ready. Like, you can't stop the inevitable here, particularly if these guys are throwing 100 with mid-90s sliders. Those are the two things that, like, the two pitches that are definitely going to exacerbate your injury risk more than anything else, right, in an arsenal?
So my thought process is twofold. Of one, max effort needs to kind of be emphasized, like, hey, let's not. Let's, you know, we can't have you as a starter just throwing 99 or whatever consistently. You have to figure out how to be 85% and then be able to push it from there. That's what Verlander did, actually. Verlander was always a guy that would ramp up in starts.
Yes.
The great foolish
the
baseball.
Old school.
The great foolish baseball video about Verlander, I think we talk about a lot with Bailey. It looks like the video that really pushed him.
That's where I discovered him. So I still remember when I saw it. I was in an airport. Someone had sent it to me. Like, have you seen this video? It was amazing.
So good, right?
But yeah, and that's an old school approach. Dial up, dial down based on the quality of the player. Now, part of it is that 1 through 9 in most lineups can take you bridge these days. Back in the day, you got, you know, some of these shortstops that were there for glove only, not glove first, glove only. They're bringing a 60 WRC plus to the table, but Verlander made it succeed. So there is room for some of that upshifting, downshifting, right?
Right. I guess what I'm saying is it's not even about the player. It's about the moment. I certainly did that myself. And that's kind of how I was bred. It was like, hey, don't always throw as hard as you can, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be some focus of that, but I very much believe that when you have a large, with anything that we talk about, when you have a massive sample or a pool of players that can be good, there needs to be some variable that makes them pop now, that makes them different. And the exceptions start showing up as more of the standard. And it used to be the exception was velocity. And I eventually believe that the exception will then be durability. And we will be able to find, once the baseline of velocity is like 95,
yeah,
right? Cool. And also, I think there's going to be a much greater emphasis of 95 with shape.
Yes.
Because then you can survive at 95 instead of being at 99, which is then less stress. Then you focus on, okay, are you durable? So I actually think that over time, as long as organizations recognize that, then they say, cool, we have all these guys, we need to battle test them better, which means that you then don't think of this like only a 100 inning thing anymore. When you have so many, stop babying them. Actually push them through. In Living on the Black is a fantastic book that follows Mike Mussina and Tom Glavine at two different moments in their career. Mussina's going up and he's one of the rising stars. Tom Glavine's at the end of his. Tom Glavine talks about the beginning of his career where he was drafted out of college and he was trying to, you know, really make a statement for Atlanta. And shortly, about a month in, he all of a sudden had shoulder problems. And he thought, oh no, like I'm going to be out for a while. I got to rest everything. They made him throw long toss every day instead. He battled through it and he got through it because it was essentially him just never really having that kind of workload before. And instead of protecting it and trying to never get him past that hump, they actually pushed through it and it worked. And I know that doesn't sound like a catch-all, and it isn't. My point is you have to weed it out somehow. Mm-hmm. And that is the way that you do it, and it stinks. You know, that is a thing that sounds so wrong. And I keep thinking about that, being like, right, to find the exceptions, you need to do what we think is the wrong and safe thing.
Yeah.
So I do wonder at some point if you'll get to that. The other half, and you're more to your side of it, which is the root of the problem, which is this isn't going to be solved in the majors. This is not going to be solved in the minors. This is going to be solved in scouting for being drafted. And yes, about high school and college. And what I think eventually needs to happen is everybody needs to be, what is your 80% velocity? Not your 100% velocity.
Exactly.
Because if I don't see, I need to see success at your 80% velocity. And if I don't have that, then I don't care. Right?
That needs to be the baseline. What you touched.
Right.
You know, and some guys will amp up to touch 99 and, well, he touched 99. So now we drafted him and he never gets there or sits there and he thinks it can be
deceiving.
And then
it also needs to be over larger samples. We have to stop. There are some guys that, like, have never gotten more than 40 innings before.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's just like, well, this is really going to do that. No, there will eventually be, in my view, that shift of just how we value ability has to be ingrained in your durability and your ability to not just be the hardest throwing thing ever. We'll teach command later. There's also a lot to be said about mechanics, about how we generate our power, and the more focus on the lower half, the better. The more we focus on stride length and extension, the better. Those things, I think we're getting, you know, there are many more advancements on that every single year, it feels like. So it's going to take a while. This stinks right now, and I want to actually transition this into kind of what this means more for fantasy.
Yes.
Because I mean, there's a lot of conversations of like, okay, you limit the rosters more, the MLB players, those union won't do that. And so no, that's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. Oh, if you're a starting pitcher, you have to go a certain amount of innings or whatever like that. That's never going to be a thing because it's just too much nuance, too many questions, too many goalposts, whatever that you got to hit and all this kind of
stuff. Exactly.
Not going to happen. So there's a lot of weird solutions to that, and maybe we'll go into that another time, but I do want to talk about the fantasy impact of all of this. We're going to talk about that after this break. So we're back here at the fire. Look at this lovely burning thing, which is essentially our energy for this topic. As, oh man, we got the flamethrowers going. And we look back at our preseason rankings. When we have these guys, we say, cool, the safe ones are Gerrit Cole, the safest guy there is. He's out for, you know, to what, until June 1st or so. Spencer Strider then turned into SP number one. He already was, but there was some contention before. He's now out for a while. We have Tyler Glasnow, who was the injury-prone guy and still is.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we're reconsidering him. I'm looking at my adoration of Cole Reagans, and I'm just now a ball of anxiety. You can throw away the one Tommy John kind of thing, or whatever. Just no one is safe. If you,
exactly.
Glimmer makes this great point. Hey, if you've gone a lot of innings, well, then you've got a lot of mileage. Hey,
exactly.
You have a former injury, then you're also prone to it. Like, there's no winning.
Yeah.
It doesn't
you're
matter.
Not proven if you haven't pitched Mason Miller or even Cole Reagans. Like you said, if you've already had it, you're a risk. And then, like you said, once you start to get the innings, then you're a risk. Aaron Nola, Framber Valdez. There is, and this is why I've been trying to stress over the years, there's no such thing as a safe pitcher. We talk about the 10 step, no such thing as a pitching prospect. There's no such thing as a safe pitcher in fantasy. It doesn't mean that there aren't guys that are safer. Tyler Glasnow is less safe than other guys because of his extensive history of injuries and the fact that he's maxed at 120. But don't tell me that you can't dream of a world where you would take Tyler Glasnow and hope that this is the year that he pops 150 over Logan Webb, because Logan Webb's done it for so much longer, as if he is immune to injury. And I don't say that to dog Logan Webb. I had him in my top 10. I love him. Part of it is his volume, but I know that he's not guaranteed. And the simple fact is there is no safe pitching, Nick. And so with that in mind, do we move away from early pitchers? Now, you already kind of exist in a world where that's never really been your bag, but in fairness to you, you've never said it's because of the injury piece.
Right.
It's more because of your confidence in the middle and late tiers to find the next Cole Reagans. You might even lose out on your boy Cole Reagans when he's getting propped up to the high heavens this year like he was. That's okay. I'm going to find the next one. I share in that. I am more open to taking that foundational piece, but I do like to live in the middle and back ends of the tiers, thinking that, hey, I can do my work there. Pitching is something that I feel like I have a decent handle on. It's your expertise through the roof. You know, the way you study it every day, know everyone's arsenal like the back of your hand, that does make you more confident. Does the injury only further your resolve to approach this way? Does it drive it, you know, even deeper where you say, now I'm not even going to take a pitcher before the 10th round or something?
Oh man.
What does this start to do? And we never want to overreact, but this isn't new, by the way. The framings of this injury epidemic being new, we do this every year, literally every April. So it's not new, but has anything changed with how you're operating, not just because of your trust of yourself later, but also because of these early injuries now?
I mean, yeah, it is worse, guys. It's so much worse every year. It does feel like if you throw hard now, you're done. I'm more convinced than ever. And I am.
Is it because it's happening right now with several pitchers?
Honestly, you know, putting out the chart of like the top seven velocity throwers from last year and like only Miller being alive.
Yeah.
And it's just, okay. It's getting to a point of, I mean, I really was just, you know what, shrug shoulders, can't really plan for this kind of thing. And I get so many questions about velocity and affecting guys. Actually, it used to be sliders.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned the mid-90s sliders being the second biggest factor after the big velo guys.
Right. I mean, if you throw a mid-90s slider, though, it means that you already have probably a good fastball too. But
true.
Right,
you're probably already in that bucket. Anyway,
but then again,
so
right,
let's
say you don't or something like that. Maybe. The thing about sliders that I've always said is the safest way to throw a baseball is one with the best IVB. And that is essentially you have the most active spin.
And IVB stands for what?
Right. I'm going through all of this. Don't worry. I was going through all the ridiculousness and I'll get there. So IVB is induced vertical break, right? Rise of the fastball. And the way you get that is by throwing a four-seamer that has the most active spin. Active spin being the most efficient spin of the ball going in the same direction as where it's going. So the most backspin you can get on it. Think of it like in tennis or something. You have top spin, it goes down faster. Backspin, it stays up more. So if you get more backspin, the ball is going to not fall as much. The best way to do that is if you're straight over it, like at 12 o'clock going straight down with your wrist. And that is the most comfortable thing you can do with your wrist. Fall straight forward, not to the left, not to the right, straight down. So when you see guys with super high induced vertical break, it generally means that they're staying on top of that fastball as much as they can and gain the most active spin on that. That's good. So those are the ones that I'm like, okay, that's fine. And when you throw a slider, You can be, you're falling off a lot to the right. You're supinating a bit and you're opening up your hand. You can actually kind of feel if you put your index finger over your elbow on the inside of your elbow, and then you keep your hand out like forward, and then you twist it to the right. You'll feel the tendon move. And it's, you'll feel that tendon. That's what you're doing every time at a full velocity. But then if you just drop your wrist and you put, you know, with your palm down, you just drop it. Mm-hmm. You don't feel that tendon move. So
I'm doing these things right now. These will soon be on video, right?
There you go. We'll soon be on video. You guys can see all this stuff. You can ask me on stream as well. You can ask Spore on stream too. You're at twitch.tv/Spore as well.
Correct.
You do your box and bowl. Is that right?
Yeah. Three days a week, Monday, Thursday and Friday right now.
Oh, love it. So yeah, check those out. You can ask us all these questions, of course. Mm-hmm. Long story of that is a lot of sliders are thrown wrong. And you should be throwing it with a stiff wrist, in my view, of just like your four seamer, just tilting the seams off. So you're just still staying on top of it as you can. But for those that are throwing more of the, I don't know, aggressive horizontal ones at that same angle, then it's just not as good. Regardless, going back to the initial question of just the impact of starters on this. Yeah, you're right. I wasn't really moving on from early starters because of this. It was more that the quality gap isn't so large, I think, between the early tier and the mid tier versus the hitters. Yep. And I think that hitters, I mean, yeah, they do get injured less and they're more just consistent from their draft ADP.
Absolutely.
In my view. Now, there is something to be said. Let's say there are 20 starting pitchers who are elite or so, right? And we're going to say that half of them get hurt every year. Okay, I remember last year I put out a thing that was the top 31 in ADP, 16 of them tossed 24 or fewer starts last year.
Goodness.
Okay. Half, that's over half of them, right? The thing is, if you have one of those 10, you are so far ahead now.
Yeah.
And that's the other part of it.
So there is a risk reward factor that you have to consider.
Right. And in some ways, that makes me feel like you need to be heavy into starters early. Because if you can hoard if you get two of these now of 10, you are so far ahead of the pack.
And that is one thing that I have told people when they go with the big ace, don't wait to back them up. Yeah. Don't put it all on them, all your eggs in the one basket there. Take Strider and then your next starter comes in the sixth round. No, no, no. You get your second starter in one of those next three, four rounds. I know that's a lot of investment in pitching, but that's how you can really make it work there, is if you're going to commit to the actual pitching as opposed to just trying to let that one lottery ticket be your hit.
So I don't know which side I'm on, honestly, yet.
Yeah,
that's it's a hard. Very logical argument. And I think every single year, it comes down to what is the hitter pool like? What is that gap between the top end and the middle? And I think this year the gap was not very large at all with pitchers. I'm seeing like Joe Ryan right now. I'm just like, yeah, Joe Ryan is looking great and that's cool. And the gap between him and look at, I don't know, someone who's healthy right now is doing great. Look at Pablo Lopez, his teammate, not that far. Mm-hmm. So it's not really one of those elements where I thought that Bobby Miller, honestly, is not that far away from him. That was in the sixth, seventh round or so in your 12th years, as opposed to the third round, right? So I'm not quite saying that we're there yet to hoard it. And fun fact, my very last draft of the year, which was Wednesday night, it's my hometown league. I live streamed it. I had the 12th pick, so around the turn, my top 11 hitters went, and I was so upset.
Ugh.
So what did I do? Currency? I took Spencer Strider.
Oh, Strider.
I did it once. Yeah. I wanted to, I'll do this once. The one time I've ever done
goodness.
It. I should have done it for.
Nick, I can't help but think about if I had taken Strider in that main event, how bad I'd be feeling. I had the 1-1 in my second main event. And
it.
I took Acuna. Honestly, I didn't almost do it. It was a talking point. I discussed it with a few of my friends. And push come to shove, I couldn't get there. I wasn't even particularly close. Not because I thought he was going to get hurt. Nothing like that. I'm not a soothsayer. It was just because Acuna is so insane. And we haven't seen it yet. I don't care. It's been 10 games. I still feel great about that. Obviously, I feel exponentially better about it now that he's gotten hurt. Not that I'm happy he got hurt for all my friends who did pick him. That's just so painful. Then who'd you back him up with?
For Matt Olson. So I went the full Atlanta crew.
I love that.
And then actually, my second starter was Justin Steele.
Oh my goodness, Nick. See, I like that though. You backed him up with a good one. You got unlucky on that though.
Right. And then
he makes the excellent defensive play and gets murked.
I'll figure it out. You know, don't worry. I'll be
so
fine.
That's the thing.
I always do.
Because we're talking about, like, you know, if you can land on a couple of those big dogs, things that really go crazy for you.
Yeah.
One of the things when you're playing the 12 teamers is you talk about the depth on the waiver wire, and that is where your strength hits. Doesn't that, in a way, give you a little bit of license to maybe go for these early guys? And if they bust, you're not going to be as hurt because you feel like you can play the waiver wire perfectly.
Well, that is a huge, huge boom. Absolutely. That's always the fun for me is finding it. The problem though is I want to be doing that anyway, with sure. The guys in the 7 through 10 rounds for the most part. And then actually how I always say is like, cool, you want 3 or 4, you don't drop through the year as a foundation. Yes. Just like, hey, I have something here that allows me to do that.
They're
because
every
I don't
week.
Have that one or two holding me while I'm obviously going to fail a ton at this. It's just about eventually getting to the guys that you like by like essentially May 15th or so. Mm-hmm. And then having just one spot that you're rotating. If you don't have that, then it's like, oh boy, this is pretty bad. So in that league in particular, I have already moved on from AJ Puck. I've already replaced that one, but fortunately I was able to sneak in Tyler Wells a little bit there. I already have it's like, cool, you just kind of move on and adapt. It's fine. Especially in that case where Tyler Wells hadn't gone yet. So I just moved on and I got Wells there. That's a quality start league too, so that works.
That's an easy
but
scoop.
I have Jared Jones in one of those as well. So like, and that's my team name in another league. It's Jones Are Their Money, which if you are a I Think You Should Leave fan, that is the greatest name I've come up with in a long time.
That's really good.
If I had Burns, then Worms Are Their Money too, right? Jones and Burns Are Their Money. But that's really that's another element to this. I think what's also interesting too is how do I rank like Reagan's, Skubal, Glasnow now, right? Glasnow now.
Glasnow now.
Skubal got worse at the end of that last game. Velocity dropped a lot. Weather maybe, but that's always like, oh gosh, don't do this. There's Kevin Gausman, but that's a shoulder thing. And I think he'll probably, I mean, if that is a real problem, then he'll probably just get rested for another 2-3 weeks or something like that. But it feels like it's a ticking time bomb right now with Cole Reagans. Feels like it is with Skubal. Anyone who throws hard now, I'm just so hyper aware of. Are you changing your rankings in any way because of all of this?
On like the ticking time bomb aspect, no. Just because I know it's inevitable, but I don't know that it can necessarily be planned for. I'm not going to down my Bobby Miller ranking because of how hard he throws under the notion of like, well, he's probably going to get hurt anyway. You know, Hunter Green, Jordan Hicks, guys who've been injured before, they're the two fastest throwers right now. You know, do we maybe not go all in on Garrett Crochet because of it? No, for me, I'm going to rank him pretty high because like right now, he, for me, Garrett Crochet, while he's upright, I don't know how many innings he's going to get, is a top 30 pitcher.
Already. Oh, wow. Top 30?
Yeah. Who am I sitting him against? Atlanta. That's it. And I didn't even have to.
Man. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. So I don't know yet.
I am surprised that you're not as in on that because I feel like you
Well, I mean, I have him at 40.
Okay.
You know, I'm not necessarily out on him. I moved him. Let's see, where did I actually? I put him at 41. So okay. Like, I have Aaron Civale still ahead of Garrett Crochet because I feel like Aaron Civale. I know that I'm getting.
I love Civale.
There's more stability and like, cool. I know this about him. And even trust me, I'm the guy that's like, hey, this is awesome. I'm all about the exciting guys. I have Jared Jones at 32.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you have Jared Jones actually. I'm curious about that between Garrett Crochet and him.
He's actually, they kind of reversed from your rankings. I got Jared Jones in the late 40s.
Interesting. So why do you have Jones lower than Crochet?
I mean, Crochet, has he walked anybody yet? I don't know. He's looked as dominant as he could. And sure. I've just been so impressed with him. And it's really, it's nothing about like, oh, he's a rookie and he's not going to be trusted. I love what Jared Jones has done too. And his swing strike rate is like literally off the charts right now. It's like 22% or something. I've just been so impressed with Crochet. And I think that maybe I'm just trusting him a little bit more. But then it kind of comes down to the glob aspect of like, how different are they even at,
yeah. No, you know, right.
And I said top 30. He's in the 30s. So it's actually top 40 would be the proper way to say it because he's 36. Yeah. So we're not that far off.
Yeah.
We're not that far. I did say top 30, but I realized that he's in the 30s. So that was an improper way of stating that.
We're pretty cool there. I would think that I would be more in than you are because Garrett Crochet wins is a thing. That is going to be a problem, I think, for Crochet.
Of course. Of course it's going. But in... I'm going to just roll him out there I hope that Chicago doesn't try to baby him too much. Obviously, don't run him into the ground and hurt him.
No, they won't.
But yeah, let him pitch.
No, they're 100% not going to baby him. I think any starting pitcher that you see pitching in the opening rotation, let alone on opening day, is not going to get babied.
So you think Mize and Meyer fit that bill as well?
No, they're not going to get babied. I mean, this is actually, I think you know, to connect it with the other conversation, we've seen the Strasburg rule. We've seen all of that. And to what does it work? Like, no.
It didn't work at all. And that's my whole thing. It's like that stuff doesn't work. You know what it is, though? The reason that and obviously that one was so big and with as well as they were playing, it really blew up in their face. Thankfully, they ended up winning one. To me, it's kind of like the MLB version of punting. In the NFL where you don't get questioned when you punt the quote unquote right way in the right situations. Right. But every time Dan Campbell misses, I got clown Lions fans, my brethren, saying the dumbest stuff. And it drives me insane. Why'd we go for it there? Hey, you're in for all of it or none of it, right? This is his strategy. It doesn't work every time. Nothing does. And so I think in a way, when you do shut the guys down and you do baby him, you say, we tried and he still broke, bummer. But if you push and you do something that's unorthodox, quote unquote, then that's when you catch the heat. So it can be sometimes a self-preservation thing.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that one. By the way, you said the MLB and I was like, what? And then you actually made it. It's like the MLB exception. I was like, okay, cool. Okay, that's actually.
Instead of saying the MLB. Yeah.
So that's something we've seen, say, like Alec Manoa. We saw it with George Kirby and Logan Gilbert. We've seen these teams that you would think would be, okay, cool, like 110, 120 to 150, 160. But no, it's just every 5 days they are going.
They're pitching.
And that's how it is. I've also talked a lot about how innings isn't really the thing. It's intense pitches, which
it's high stress pitches.
Max effort and how much max effort's happening. I think that Kirby and Logan Gilbert, I could be wrong, but they aren't as max effort all the time.
No, they're dialers. They're that Verlander piece that you're talking about with the dial up, the dial down situation.
I think they
Kirby
do.
Coming off that unfortunate outing. I could be wrong.
If someone has some better data for me, it says, Nick, that's actually not the case with it. Please, please send it my way. But just to put a pin on the Jerry Jones and Crochet stuff, for Crochet, I think that his... I don't know if he's consistent enough. I don't know how actually overwhelming that four-seamer is. And the slider, I watch games with him. I watch his innings, and it's like sometimes they're great, and sometimes they just like are not at all. And the cutter has all of a sudden woken up, which is good. 13 for 14 strikes in the last game for Crochet, I believe, against
the cutter and the walks were the two issues why I really zoomed him more than thought I would even zoom him.
17% mistake rate on that cutter, so which is absurdly high.
Like, okay, I was going to say, what's about an average? Okay.
4% is like, okay, good, this is a good cutter. Like, average is only 70%. 70% is really high. The reason is because Crochet is just throwing these down the middle. Thing is, it could be like Kodai Senga's cutter, where Kodai Senga would just have a scatter shot of fastballs and then the cutter. And because it's a scatter shot at like 96 or so with the four-seamer, that cutter coming in at 91, 92, guys, it's just enough of a difference that you can't barrel it and do damage off of it. So maybe that's the case with Crochet. To me, I'm excited, just like you are, about him. I need to see more sample of Crochet. He's not going to have this 2% walk rate, in my view. And
I don't necessarily think that's going to hold either.
I don't think you do. Yeah. And I'm very curious how he looks when that doesn't go well. When I actually get excited about guys truly is when they are awesome, have adversity, and then come out of it.
How do they respond? Yep. And I totally agree there. That's so important.
And we haven't seen for Crochet yet. We haven't seen for Jerry Jones, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Jerry Jones's four-seamer is miles better than Crochet's, if you can believe it. And he's so good. But yeah, he doesn't have that cutter to get more strikes, which is an interesting difference there. Pirates are winning.
Jones rules, man. I'm wearing the Pirates lid on purpose with intent here. I'm excited about what they can do. They still got Skeens waiting in the wings too. A couple of these, finesse veteran lefties, give them some real innings. Perez, Gonzalez, that can fill in that back end there with Keller, Jones, Skeens at the top. I think they can make a run at this division eventually.
That's a very winnable division there.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if the Cubs do acquire somebody at the deadline. That is going to round up this part of it. However, guys, if you forgot, we've got some games. We've got some picks from last week we have to review. And, of course, the streaming picks for this week, our one-game battle sitting pitchers, and the star of the week. We're going to do all of that after this break. All right, Spore. So, I love this. This is so fun. We have these games we do each week. Where we pick one pitcher across four different categories. We have these different thresholds for each one. Mm-hmm. After week one, it was 3-2 I was leading. However, going over last week, I picked my streamer as Jose Quintana against Detroit. He actually got pushed to Cincinnati, and we established a rule here. If that start gets pushed, it's just a only win possibility.
It's a free roll. Pitcher.
Free roll. I love that. I got very fortunate. He went against the Reds, which I would not have done in Cincy.
No.
He came out ahead. So I get a point there. And yes, of course, I do have this. No, if I can't hit it.
Can't hold it. There you go. There you go.
Then you had Luis Gil against the Jays. How'd you feel about that one?
I felt good. This one he did to himself. I just wanted to gripe a little bit about it on Twitter. And everyone had to come at me like, you still play in wins leagues, blah, blah, blah. Oh, my goodness. Can a guy not just get a little fantasy gripe and like, dang, another good outing from my boy and he can't go five when the win is sitting on the platter there? Again, I thought that they played him a little too light in Arizona. I didn't think he had to come out when he did. At 4 2/3. In this one, he ran his pitch count up 95 pitches. He labored a bit. There was a little bit of Angel Hernandez business, will. But it wasn't all him. I will critique Angel when he deserves it, which is always. But he'll dug his own grave a little bit there. Four walks, 95 pitches. However, 8 Ks, still a winner. 17.6 on the DK points, and you got 13.4 on the free roll. Dub for both of us on the streamers.
There we go. Sit of the week. I said Hunter Green in Cincinnati because I just said, you know what? I know the Mets are bad, but Hunter Green, you're going to allow a home run? Absolutely not. I messed up. You had Carlos Rodon against the Diamondbacks. This was 200 runs in 5.1 innings, a bad whip, 3 Ks. I'm going to say this was okay as a start, though.
The bad whip, I don't know. I think if we're going DK points, it's 8.6. I think that's a winner.
That's under 10. That's under 10, right? That's what we established. It was 10
I
or
think
under.
In fantasy, you're not mad if you sat him. Right. But you're certainly not mad that I recommended. If you followed the reco, I think you're like, okay, fine. It was 2 solos, 9 base runners and 5 1/3. It was not a bad outing, but from the DK point thing that we're using at 8.6,
so that's
bang, that's a dub. So nice. Now we're tied.
Now we're tied here. It's 4-4 right now. We have star of the week. I picked Mackenzie Gore against the Phillies, and I'm going to go with that one.
Absolutely, baby.
He looked good. It worked out well. I actually really think that Mackenzie Gore is going to be a true star this week.
Gets Oakland this week.
Oakland. Oh my gosh. The fastball is looking great. 97 plus. He's getting it upstairs. And honestly, he could have done even better if he had better secondaries here. So I'm giving myself the win there.
You get a fat dub.
But Blackburn.
I have a question first, though.
Please.
Is there anything Mackenzie Gore can do at Oakland to get you confident for a home Houston start the following week?
If he has his secondaries working, if he's just like more with the four seamer, killing it. And then he's also getting that cutter cruising. Like, yeah.
Then you think you could be open to going for him.
Keep it upstairs and maintain that.
He's got the talent to be an all formats must start, Mackenzie Gore does.
Pretty much.
Paul Blackburn does not, but we've been spotting him properly here. He goes 23.7 points against my Tigers. We're so inept at the dish right now. Dropped 2 of 3 to Oakland. A lot of that early spice about how exciting the Tigers were goes by the wayside. It's unfortunate. He draws Washington. In fact, I think he faces Gore. No, they actually miss each other. Irvin goes up against Blackburn, and then Gore gets Boyle. Ooh, that could be 12 walks between the two starters if things go haywire for Gore and Boyle. Or they could be where they were last week, where both of them kept the walks in check and did well.
Didn't throw strikes. It was like a 52% strike rate, and the Tigers just bailed him out a ton.
Exactly. In fact, Benetti gave him the old effectively wild and referenced the podcast. I had to send the clip over to Ben say, did you see this? And Jason said, oh, they're probably going to use this on the podcast. And Ben goes, you're absolutely right. We are.
You know, I have a name actually for a guy like Joe Boyle now. I have two of them.
Let's hear it.
Guys who have high walk rates, but they're different, right? Like Snell is a high walk rate, but it's nibbling around the edges.
Yes.
While Joe Boyle is your old Freddy Peralta of just like scatter shots.
Yes.
So you have your neck beards, which are nibbling around the edges. Okay. So you have like the sideburns and then the thing underneath. Yeah. Right. And then you have your general disarrays. General disarray.
Yeah.
That is your Joe Boyle. Okay.
I love it. So, I love it.
There you go. Paul Blackburn. Yeah.
So you get a couple dubs all right. There.
And then we had a one game matchup. And this was interesting because there was a rain delay that cut, I think, I don't know if it cut Stone short, but it certainly...
It cut both. It was hours.
It cut both. Okay, good.
It was hours.
I mean, Stone did get 70 pitches in. Shota only went 43.
Shota looked great.
He was killing that one. So I get that one. I think...
Fat dub.
Yeah, and Gavin Stone, it didn't really go... I mean, it was unearned runs, but it was
saved
not a start
him.
That you want to really hang your hat
no.
on.
No. So I'm taking the L there. You're up 5-4 now, or is
all
it
right.
no
so
6-5?
5-4 entering
6-5. Wait. Six, it was 4-4 four, yeah, four after five. The yeah. Okay,
6-5.
So you still have a 1-point edge going yes. into this week's games. Go
now,
ahead. Take us.
Sorry. So through week two, we got 6-5 here. Week three coming. So streamers, let's start with you here. Who is your streaming pick of the week? Remember, guys, this is 20% or lower on Fantasy Pros rostership.
Yeah, so what you're looking at there is ESPN and Yahoo leagues, and one can be overweighted there. I was kind of looking through some guys and realizing that one outlet was way better than the other about rostering a certain player.
Involved? It's
are possible. They?
Yeah, I think oh. so.
Okay, if it's all three, that's even better, of course. But either way, 20% is a nice threshold. There's going to be availability for a lot of you. And I'm jumping on back on the Alec Marsh train here. Now, he wasn't as great in the second start. It's interesting. It's that classic two-step where you take the tough start to get the easy one, and then the guy reverses it. And Alec Marsh was great in Baltimore, dominant there, 7 innings of 1-run ball, and then pretty meh against the White Sox, which was the start you really wanted. 8 hits, 3 runs, and 4 2/3, only 3 punchy. So it wasn't great. That said, I'm going back to the well with him. I'm trusting him enough to go up against the Mets in New York, if only because of the matchup. Like, I'm not crazy on Alec Marsh right now, where I'm like, oh, must get him, all that sort of stuff. I like him in the 15 teams. I like streaming him in 12s, and this is a spot where I'll do it because I don't think the Mets can really punish guys even when they're not really cooking. So I think there's a solid floor here for Marsh, and I love the way his ball club is playing, that they could get him a win even with like a decent outing, 5 innings, 3 runs, 4 Ks type of deal, which you wouldn't be writing home about, but if it comes with a dub, it's good. And then there's the upside to be more like he was in Baltimore. So I like Alec Marsh, 10% rostered, going up against the Mets in New York.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because he obviously did well against Baltimore there. He had much better sweepers and changeups in that one to keep the Orioles off of his heater and then allow out, collect a ton of outs on the changeup. 8 outs mm-hmm. in that game. Just 1 in the 1 against the White Sox. And if you're wondering, how did you get that stat, Nick? Well, you go to our player pages and you go to you expand it and you see outs next to changeup, and it's wonderful. So I really do hope that he does well there. And yeah, of course, Alec Marsh against the Mets. I mean, it's the Mets. The Mets are so bad. That's
the thing. This is a full matchup play here. This is, I'm not, again, overly confident in the pitcher, but I'm not trying to fence it on the play. It's a full play. I'm in, but I'm saying it's because of the Mets more so than it is because if Waka's available, get him, but he goes over the roster threshold that we had. Some leagues Waka's going to be available. Make sure you jump on him.
Right. So when it comes to my stream pick, I'm going to go with Bowden Francis.
Okay.
Who obviously couldn't find his secondary against the secondaries against the Yankees. Had to rely too much on fastballs, and there was that grand slam they allowed to Giancarlo Stanton.
Did you see that hit?
Oh, I mean, I did. I was there.
Oh, you were there.
Did you? I watched it later. Too. Yeah. Yes.
Was that a bad pitch? I thought
that
was more
in
Stanton.
The context of the at bat.
Okay.
So
The full at bat. I just saw the pitch.
He couldn't throw a secondary for a strike, and you could see that
So he had to throw a heater.
Fastball. He had to throw his bases loaded 2-2. Stan's just sitting heater. And
that absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I thought the location was okay.
Yeah, no, right. In general, that spot is good up and in. But when you're going against Stanton, who's time for a heater at that moment,
he's
going
to turn on it. Yeah.
93 mile per hour fastball.
There. Fair enough. 93 sitting there is not going to get him in that sequence.
I was shouting. We were at the section in the above nosebleeds, but looking straight down so I could like see all this. And I'm going, man, do not. Oh, you got to throw a secondary right now. Come on.
And he couldn't. He
goes, nope, there's a fastball. Fouls it back. I'm like, come on.
Is this last chance saloon with Bowden Francis?
Well, a little bit. It is against Rocky Road. And the Rockies are so bad that you can actually start against them in Coors right now.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Absolutely bonkers. So you got to think, Bowden Francis, you should be able to do this. Your four-seamer gets a ton of break upstairs and should miss a lot of bats there. Your curveball should be better than it was last time. You have a splitter that you're working on. Good win chance. Like across the board at 1% rostered in Fantasy Pros, I feel like, okay, guys, this is one that you should circle. Be like, I think this should go well. So Bowden Francis, my streaming pick of the week. Sit of the week. This is one that has to be rostered in at least 50% of leagues. Might seem a little bit off-putting for some, but you have this guy on the Padres who really did improve in his last start. It feels a little safer, but you're saying, no, I don't care. I'm not going to start him in this one.
And I'm not averse to starting against the Yankees. I was on Bailey Ober saying this is a guy I love. I'm sticking with him. I got to believe.
Dodgers,
but
starting against the Dodgers, you mean?
Yeah. Who did I say?
Yankees.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. The Dodgers here. I'm not always running away from them with pitchers I like in this mid-tier, and I think Michael King is in this tier, but I am going to go ahead and take the pause here. It was a much better start, that second one against San Francisco there, after the 7-walk debacle against them, which I thought was just an anomaly. I don't think that that's who he is, but I think if you can, you know, you're never going to go broke fading Dodger starts, right? And so if we are talking more the 10-12 team context, which is what we are with these games here, because we're expanding out to a broader audience, then I say, why take the risk? I love Michael King. I was in on him. I was paying an elevated price, but why even take the risk with the Dodgers start? Going to go ahead and sit him on the road at the Dodgers. Hopefully it doesn't go, or it goes well, because I still want things to go well when I sit a guy, because that's going to build my confidence for them. But if you end up dodging the bullet at the same time, I'm okay with it. Speaking of, you know, Imanaga, I didn't start him last week because it was Dodgers in the second start, and it was his first two major league starts ever. Ends up being a great week. Am I a little bummed that I missed out on those innings? Sure. But does it give me a lot more confidence in Imanaga to basically set it and forget it going forward? Absolutely. So not out on King. Do not cut him. This is just a sit to avoid the Dodgers, because they scare me a lot, Nick.
Definitely. No, I absolutely understand that. So I'm going to lean toward us benching Cutter Crawford. This is in Baltimore.
Another one I understand.
And after I made this pick, I realized, even last year, Cutter Crawford was much worse at home than he was on the road. A lot of people like to talk about a ton. I generally don't lean on home road splits. However, as Derek Carty said during our presentation at First Pitch Florida, home road splits are dumb. Park factors are not. So
that's a good way to put it.
Right. And I said, can you please tweet this out right now? Thank you so much, because I've been fighting this for ages. Stop random grouping home road. It's just a random set of,
especially if they change across, like they played for three teams in 5 years and you're saying he's never good at home. And it's like, okay, now you're going way too far with it.
Just think about this. If you have a 1 through 20, just numbers, 1 through 20, and then you randomly jumble them up and put 10 over here, 10 over here. Sure. The average is hopefully going to be the average, but there are going to be a lot of those that are like 25% of the time. It's going to be either extremely good or extremely bad.
Yeah.
That's just, you can't just only do home road splits. However, Fenway is a park factor against pitchers. Mm-hmm. And you throw that in there. You have Baltimore, who's looked so good. And then you also have Cutter Crawford, who looked so bad in that last inning against the Angels, where normally if I see a guy have that kind of frame where it's just, oh my gosh, you are just, everything is too overwhelming for you. It actually does make sense in the context that Eno talked about with Fenway being claustrophobic. They're right on you and everything is like that. And obviously the Red Sox fans are in favor of Cutter Crawford.
Of course.
When things are going south, he can probably feel that a lot. And I do wonder if that's part of the problem for Fenway for Cutter Crawford too. Regardless, this seems like a start that could very well go well. However, I want to at least showcase this might not be a lock for you with Cutter Crawford.
I'm still like this.
Leaning it, but I'm like, you know what? It's okay. You can maybe rest one start for Cutter Crawford and see how he does.
Yeah, I still love him. I'm in on Cutter Crawford. You know, I got him in 15s. I don't have the luxury of sitting him. But if you are in a shallower league, you can pick and choose a little bit more. Play it safe. Because again, even if he pops off, well, then great. Then you just have the overwhelming confidence you need for the Cleveland at Pittsburgh two-step the following week for Cutter Crawford. If he bombs, okay, then you missed it. Doesn't mean you're out on the Cleveland at Pitt. But you can reassess. So I like this here. It's the same thing with King. I think we're on the same path where we still love both these guys, but we're just sitting it out against two of the best teams, arguably the best AL and NL team on paper, at least.
Definitely. And moving from that fear, now we're going to go to the excitement, the hype.
Yes.
The fun, the stuff where we then hear the ice in our tumbler and we reflect on the good times when we were really excited about this guy and it just happened to work out. You have someone on the Rangers. That was very much forgot about some guys, you know, actually, and again, credit here, labeled him as a deep league sleeper. He's really had two great starts so far. You have a good matchup here for Cody Bradford, and you're pretty excited.
It's a great matchup. So I'm really excited for Cody Bradford to have a little swan song star. And it's a swan song because he's probably coming out of the rotation for Michael Lorenzen. However, big Stephen A, however there, I'm not necessarily kicking him off my team right now. And that includes 12 teamers because where I think he's going to go is into the long man role where he's still going to get 6 to 8 innings a week, right? Look at this rotation. Who do you really bank on for 5, 6 every single time out? Not much. And one or two of these guys a week is probably going to need somebody to go multiple innings behind him. That's where Bradford comes in. Those will be leveraged innings in that the win will probably be in the balance. So even if he does have this bad, I almost said bad ASS. So I didn't want to swear in front of you. So if he has this awesome outing and, you know, then comes out of the rotation, you think, well, I'm going to get rid of him. Do not, because first off, he's the first man up. And secondly, I think he can have enough fantasy value in 12s and 15s, even as a long-term middle or long inning middle reliever, getting win potential, getting a lot of strikeouts. I think he cooks Oakland and maybe even makes their decision harder. Maybe if Lorenzen's not ready, they're like, let's push that off a week because Cody Bradford's looking really nice.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if necessarily in 12 teamers, I would hold on to Bradford if he doesn't have a rotation spot. I think it is interesting and it could be, I'll put it this way. I don't know if Bradford's so good that I would hold on at least a week just to see if he gets another shot again. However, I am going to say, let's say he does well here, which he should against Athletics.
Yeah.
Why would the Rangers remove this?
I don't know.
I don't think that they will, honestly. I think they actually even delayed Lorenzen again because of how well Bradford did. He was supposed to actually come back for this start, and he didn't.
Exactly.
So why not maybe Andrew Heaney? Why, you know, that could theory, he's done the long man role before.
Yep.
And if Bradford's just cruising, then like that just might stick around there. So I like this one. I think that you're just going to get more and more emphasis for Cody Bradford being a thing.
I wonder
if the changeup can be better because I see him as a lefty Bailey Ober. He just needs a better changeup.
I think that's a great way to put it. And you know how much I love Bailey Ober.
Yours, start of the week.
By the way, I got to give a little setup here, man. You are like, this is awesome. That's it. I'm so excited by this because, I mean, you dug in the crates, you know, the old school digging in the crates, looking for albums. You went in the crates for this one and I really appreciate it.
Well, so let's hear it. I appreciate you setting up like that. I will mention that I was doing my streamers article right before this podcast and I incorrectly said who the starter was for this team. And then I had someone, Fertree, who just then sent me, hey, Nick, I think you meant this guy. I was like, oh, right, that guy. And then we went to this. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take that guy. I also do want to mention, I almost took Ryan Nelson against the Cardinals because he just had a great game against Atlanta. Cutter looks much better. That would be my guy if it weren't for Jose Soriano.
Bang.
And you're wondering, who is that?
Not an Angels fan, you might not know who that is. Like, he had 42 innings in relief last year, but he's blazing.
Oh, man. Jose Soriano all of a sudden came out of Ron Washington's mouth in, like, February. And he said, yeah, he's we're trying to get him in the rotation. And we look on the paper, we go, well, there's Tyler Anderson, there's Patrick Sandoval, there's Reed Detmers, there's Griffin Canning, there's Chase Silseth. Like, how how is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Right. And then the entire spring, I'm like, oh, maybe Jose Soriano. I'm like, no, there's not going to happen. Well, guess what? This guy who threw 100 on his four seamer last year, but it's actually a better sinker, better movement profile, is now in the rotation after actually looking kind of decent in the spring with some great strikeout numbers, because Chase Silseth is one of those guys we talked about in the first half of this. He has elbow soreness and he's on the shelf for a moment. Yeah. So I have no idea if this is really going to pan out. However, he has two starts and they're both against the Rays. And if you've been following this, the Rays have been a very bad offense. They just have not come through in the slightest. So Jose Soriano in this new position now doesn't seem like he's a massive walk guy. Might just chuck a ton of sinkers at high velocity and not allow contact on them. And bam, all of a sudden everyone goes, wait, hold on a second. Do I want Jose Soriano for the Sunday game as well against the Rays again? So I'm very curious. Actually, the Rays would be next week, I think, rather than the Sunday.
Yes.
But I'm super curious. This could be all of a sudden someone that I lead with for the roundup tomorrow or on actually Thursday morning. Well, I'm so excited and watch it just fizzle out. But he is my star of the week. I'm stoked for to watch Jose Soriano, and I hope you are too.
Because of you. You put him on my radar, and I can't wait to watch this. And I vaguely do remember him as a reliever last year. Like, oh, this is a nice flamethrower. But, you know, everyone churns out dudes that can – you're talking going back to our early part of the talk there. You got guys that – it's a factory. You know, throw 100 in the bullpen. It used to be if you had one of those guys, wow. Now if you don't have four, your bullpen's lame. And so can you do something to cultivate that guy into a starter? We'll see with Soriano. Got a new splitter that helped him get some of those strikeouts in spring. Can't wait to see what he does. So that's a great pick. I love it.
Yeah, the curveball was his main number two last year. I love this phrase, primary, secondary. And
I've used that phrase before too, and it feels so weird to say.
So good. 63% strike rate last year. So hopefully it looks a little bit better in the other games that he has, because on the last two have been three innings each. And not really the most impressive, not a good four-seamer shape, has not really found that curveball yet, but I do wonder if we'll see that extra element. Not to mention those were against Baltimore and
Baltimore, yes.
Los Angeles hosting the Red Sox. Last one here, as we're just going over the hour mark here, we have our one-game matchup. This is a very fun one because, honestly, I could take either one, and probably so could you.
Yes.
This is Tanner Houck hosting Reed Detmers in Fenway. Who do you have here, Spore?
Yeah, I'm totally in agreement that I could go either way, but I went with my guy, which is Reed Detmers. I've been a Reed Detmers fan pretty much from Jump Street with him. You know, we've had ups and downs together already in his short career, but he's still a guy I keep coming back to. I couldn't get away from him this year. Got him in a couple leagues. Still really believe in him as a stud. Looked amazing over the weekend. Loved dialing in on that outing. 12 strikeouts against Boston. I was watching every second of that. Gets the rematch with them, going to be facing them in Boston this time around. Can't wait to see what he does. I think we could come out with double winners here, but I will say that I'm excited for Reed Detmers versus Tanner Houck, and that's why I took Detmers.
Yeah, oh man, it's so funny. I was so in on Detmers for two straight years, and then I realized, like, oh man, wait, his four-seamer is just really bad. It's just like, I get it now. I understand why this didn't work before. Four-seamer isn't good, and also the slider goes in and out during the year, and like, the curveball isn't consistent enough. The changeup that he added at the end of September had some intrigue, but like, it wasn't enough. You need to fix that fastball. And I didn't expect that he would, but he did. Yeah. It's now like a really good IVB pitch, induced vertigo break. It used to get about 15, which was average, if not below average, really for fantasy purposes. But now it's like 18. And that misses far more bats upstairs. It prevents a lot more hard contact on it, which is a huge, huge difference. It also makes his changeup better, because more guys have to prep for that four-seamer. Exactly. And he was able to get away with a lot of changeups in the zone third time through last time against the Red Sox. That was really nice. They're going to be more ready for that, I think, in this one. But pair that with a slider that is hopefully on. If that slider is on, it is a very deadly pitch. It's what made me enamored with Detmers in the first place. I'm actually really sad because, like, this is the one year I don't have Detmers. And, of course, this is where he's now looking like his best.
Well, self. I just stuck with him too because, you know, hoping for some growth. And it's, you know, you identify the problem with the fastball and it's like, will they ever get it? Sometimes we stick with guys for years and they never fix that kind of one key flaw. Thankfully, he's taken some steps so far. But it's not like you're stuck with a slouch. Tanner Houck, the silver lining, or as I like to say when I'm not really that happy about it, copper lining, because I really was excited about Giolito. But the copper lining of him going out this year was that it guaranteed Houck's and Whitlock's role. They were kind of fighting. Now instead, bang, they're locked in. The entire rotation, I think, except for Bale. So four of the five guys have a sub-1 ERA right now.
Wow.
And Houck is amongst Pivetta, that.
Unfortunately, now dealing with Elvis Soria on the IL. That we expected to be Cooper Criswell. That's what the word was in spring, that he would be the next one up. However, he started on Sunday, so you won't see him until the weekend, likely. Mm-hmm. Probably have some bullpen game or something. Gonzalez?
Winkelman Gonzalez, yeah.
Winkelman, yeah, there we go. Or 40 Winks, Winkowski. Something along those lines. Not worth it. Maybe Criswell will, not really. But Tanner Houck, I'm a little curious because a lot of these Red Sox guys, I put them in a massive tier for my fantasy, top 100, the list I put out every Monday. I have their own tier. I call it Scarlet Wool. And because I had to be poetic with Red Sox, okay, guys? And I didn't know how to rank them because they just went against the Angels and the Athletics. Like, how are you supposed to truly assess these guys when they have such good matchups, and the Mariners as well? Seattle, those are not good offenses. How did Houck succeed? It was a splitter against the Mariners against lefties. Maybe it was actually against Oakland. I take that back, which was great that time, but then wasn't good against the Angels.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest flaw for him is inside, or really just dealing with lefties, because righties, he's got the sinker slider. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried because it's Fenway. But yeah, I'm going to take Houck here because I just feel it's just a better situation. You get to face.
Just don't let Trout beat you. Basically, for him, that's all he really has to focus on.
That's the righties, so he's fine.
Yeah, exactly. If it was a big lefty, you know, Jordan Alvarez-esque, yeah, exactly. We sent the same exact guy.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Excited for this matchup.
I'm so excited. That's going to happen later this week. But that is it for today. Spore, what do you have going on in your world that you should tell the people about?
Well, we got some more content coming out for Out of the Park Baseball. That'll be on Thursday. We do the release there. I'm on OOTP Developments, their Twitch account there on Thursdays. I've got my daily SP chart coming. Still kind of going mostly off of what I thought about these guys coming into the year, making some adjustments, but not really moving off of guys. Like you saw, Bailey Ober was a full reco yesterday at the Dodgers, or home to the Dodgers. I know that was risky, but a guy I loved, I'm not moving off of one start. So you're going to see some you know, conviction on some guys that I really liked. I'm not moving off of one, two starts if there's no reason to do so, right? If they just had one bad outing type of deal. And then, of course, the podcast with Justin Mason, the sleeper in the bus, we're running Monday, Thursday, and Friday. And then my Boxes and Bowl show, Monday, Thursday, and Friday on Twitch, twitch.tv/spore at 8 a.m. Central. You should be able to see the VOD, too, if you're not getting up that early. The video on demand should absolutely be there.
Fantastic. We've got many things. One I do want to make more public is that I do have a PL Pro exclusive podcast that's on Fridays. It's the SP Fab Forecast that features two cheat sheets for your next week. That is two star pitcher rankings and a full grid of my sit and start in the tiered by the SP streamers. So that is auto start, probable start, questionable start, and do not start for every start for the week ahead. And of course, me talking about your fab decisions. I go through 12 teamers and 15 teamers. That is OCs and main event. And I go through the different tiers of, is this a high priority, a middle priority, a single stream, or just I don't want to touch it, or two step. So I go over that every single Friday. It's about a 20, 25 minute podcast. You get those cheat sheets as well. Of course, no ads on that one at all. And that's for PL Pro exclusive members. But that is it, guys. Spore, it's lovely doing this. The warmth is here.
We put the sun out, by the way.
We got the sun out, and now I don't even see those purple lights anymore.
I know, and this is why you didn't notice it, because this is how it normally looks. This lamp's always on, and this string of lights here is always on, but it's usually sunny, and we brought the sun out. When we started, it looked like it was 5 in the morning. But Nick,
I gotta say, I enjoy the dim lights.
Me too, actually. I kind of was liking the gloomy day. I kind of wanted it to dial back down. Maybe I'll close the blinds to bring that... it had me focused. I was dialed in, but back to work we go, Nick. It's always wonderful back talking to work with you.
We go. As always, Spore, everybody, you can take off your slippers now. You can change into real clothes. But for now, it was really nice hanging with you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter @Spore and @PitcherList.